So, Ibushi and Marufuji.
Ibushi Marufuji, it was interesting because it was easy to say, oh, what a horrible, terrible match that was, you know. And most people I spoke with right after the match, Japanese or Americans, oh, that was the worst match I've ever seen. It's like, a bad match, this, that. Like, it is easy to say it was bad match when you are expecting video game Ibushi against video game Marufuji. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that's intermediate wrestling level, intermediate level fans that mm-hmm. you expect, you know, same content and same like character and what you expect you will be able to see, you know, what Ibushi does and what Marufuji does. And you are expecting a certain body movements like a video game, you know, like then it was the night that the Ibushi, well, for that matter, Marufuji, showed us that they were human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That it's easy to say that it wasn't best textbook Ibushi match, neither was the textbook Marufuji match. But Marufuji 44, Ibushi, he looks young, but 41, you know, and right, physically it was not what you basically expected, but it was very important for us to learn that it was important for, you know, each guy's career. That back in 2009 they were gonna have first single match and one of them got injured and postponed, and 2011 they were gonna have this dream match single match again and one of them got injured, postponed again. So it was like 14 years in making, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, like I said, Marufuji turned 44, Ibushi 41, and all injured, banged up too. And Ibushi gave us a good hint right at the beginning of the match. It's hard at the building, but in your ABEMA TV, you know, monitor,
mm-hmm.
like, close-up shot of Ibushi, he's like, he had this tear. It's like,
mm-hmm.
He wanted this match to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this not video game textbook Ibushi, that he stood there, not moving, and then all of a sudden this tear came down. It's like, so we have to really read it or go through his mind. Mm-hmm. You know, he's so happy to have this match finally take place, or that he is the one. He's the first one to admit it's not your textbook Ibushi physique anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he just knew that. But he was able to carry this match, meaningful match, as much as he could. Of course, physically, he's not in 100%, you know. And he missed a lot of signature spot too. If you remember that sweep and go into your, you know, moonsault, that he messed that up. And there's another spot where you stand on the second rope, guys on the apron, you pull up and do the super German suplex, stuff like that, that he messed that up. And he jumped on the second rope, he couldn't even do it. And there's a few spots that's like evidently that, right, he's not what he used to be. And either was Marufuji, but they had this very meaningful, 30-minute match. Yeah. And it was interesting that I thought you were going to say, oh, that was a bad match, but just didn't think it was a bad match.
Well, the one big point of the match is that Ibushi had two broken ankles.
Before, yeah.
You know, so that's going to affect, I mean, if that's taken into account, and then you watch the match, you know, I think that plus the idea of that match was all about subtext. That wasn't, like you said, a video game flashy. I think people expected them to play the hits, play their hits, you know?
Yeah, and then they do outrageous arrow maneuvers.
Or version of it or something like that. They wanted fireworks and they got more of a story, and people were disappointed because, like you said, their expectations, but also it turned ugly so quickly, especially on the internet, that it became
that's what I'm talking about.
The general opinion before even people, I think, even saw it, or they may be, I don't know what they saw. Everyone is chiming in on the same activity or event, but they all saw different pieces of it, or they're just glomming onto another popular opinion.
Show them where they are, though.
Yeah.
How they understand wrestling.
Very much so. It exposed a lot of people, for sure. And it also, it speaks to how differently the Western audience interprets certain aspects.
Oh, Japanese fans too.
Saying
the same thing right away. It's like, oh, that was a horrible match. Oh, that was the worst match I've seen live. It's like, it's easy to say that it was a bad match if you see just, I mean, in general surface.
Honestly, if people think that, if they truly believe that is terrible wrestling.
I mean, okay.
These two guys.
What's good?
With 30 minutes. Broken ankles, and you're still saying, and we all watched, and we all know that it's not as bad as everybody says. And bad is considering the context, especially, it's a really, really silly thing to say. I think people like to sound cool and smart and present themselves online like that. It's just how it is in every culture. But like I was saying, it's just Ibushi is also some kind of magnet type of character because he attracts a lot of people that want. There is something that people have out for him. They have a hard on for Ibushi. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is with these types of fans that are really, really kind of almost obsessed with their feelings, their negative feelings about Ibushi. And I think that overshadowed the actual match.
Yeah. Because probably partially because Ibushi was the type of wrestler up to this point that never showed emotion.
Partly, yeah.
Perfect video game Ibushi wrestling, right? Mm-hmm. Perfect move. Outrageous spinning and rolling and, I mean, things that you
creative imagine. Aerial wrestling and kickboxing and what he does best. We all know him for.
I mean, it looks like a video game, you know?
I mean, he has his own
perfect
style of wrestling that he presents. It's his Ibushi style. Mm-hmm. It takes from a lot of different styles, but yeah, it's something that's not the usual type of wrestling. It's Ibushi's style. And what we got was more, I guess, conservative version of Ibushi. It wasn't that.
Or human version.
Human, sure.
Oh, very human. Yeah.
So if we're judging wrestling based on, I don't know. That's the thing. When people say this is good, this is bad, this is terrible, this is awesome. What's their criteria? Really? What are you basing it on? Are you basing it on just the moves? Yeah, are you basing it on the business of it? There's no
criteria or formula that fits to everybody.
That's the problem. You said,
it exposed who's watching, who's saying things.
Sure. Yeah. It exposed who actually stuck with it. And you can tell when somebody watched something and fully absorbed it and they say, I have this opinion on this because A, B, and C. And I go, okay, maybe I don't agree with it, but I get what you're saying and where you're coming from. And then there's just the people that like to do the game, say they like to just go, stupid, bad, Ibushi sucks, he's stupid, you know, or nothing even really intelligent or even worse.
Actually, it was one of the first matches that I actually enjoyed Ibushi's match, you know? Yeah, because for instance, Ibushi Kenny Omega, super match, right? Mm-hmm. But it wasn't my cup of tea, ever. So, I mean, good moves, you know, and the fatigue, you know, 30 minute, 40 minute, you know, sometimes 45 minute, you know, that nonstop this and that. But that's not the wrestling I grew up watching and enjoy as a storytelling, you know, just like going to different, you know, what do you call it, like pages of game, you know, like you clear a certain stage, you beat some guys and you go clear another page, it's like going another page phase. Mm-hmm. And that was about it. It wasn't my wrestling. I mean, that's how I look at it. But the 44-year-old Marufuji taking up on 41-year-old Ibushi, now it's like, let's see what they can do. And they really showed us what they are there, you know, where they are today. Yeah, so human. And evidently that the Keiichi Muto on color commentary was feeling the same thing. Oh, these two are the epitome of the outrageous stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, right at the beginning. Yeah, I think these two created the style. And so it's like, right. But that's not what they were doing that night.
I mean, it was 2009, 2010. It was a while ago. It was over a decade ago.
Yeah.
And I also think that one of the it's almost criminal that we're not talking about Marufuji enough in this match, because I imagine if this was a match with Ibushi and another wrestler, I imagine it would have played out a lot differently. And if you go back and you watch and just pay attention to Marufuji, they call him a genius because he knows where to be at every single moment that he needs to be. He has presence of mind to know where he needs to be, what he needs to do. You could tell pro wrestling is in his like blood or the DNA almost. I think he, without saying exactly what happened in the match, go watch him and watch how he preserved the match. And really, everybody, that's the thing. Everybody's Ibushi couldn't do a moonsault. He had two broken ankles. Okay. Well, he's Marufuji was, of course, brilliant. I think we're going to talk about this in a year or a couple of years from now. We're going to look at it differently. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of heat, not in the wrestling heat. I mean, like a lot of like people were very hot that week, and I saw the numbers. I mean, the interest in Noah in that match was very hot that week, but then it came down. People settled down. People got their bearings, and they either changed their opinion, they stopped talking about it, they moved on, or give it a year, give it 5 years, and go watch it and see if you have the same opinion.
If these same fans are still around.
Exactly. And sometimes, often 5 years not.
From now.
Often they've forgotten.
You know
everything.
What I'm saying? Yeah, I kind of say, well, God, I'm not sure if they can wait another five. I mean, they'll be around another 5 years constantly watching wrestling. You know, are they even a wrestling fan? Are they a trending type of, what's so cool and then watch wrestling? It's wrestling fans are different creatures, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But the Marufuji, it was actually Marufuji match.
It was Marufuji celebrating his 25th anniversary debut.
Yeah. And also, he's more Mr. Noah than anybody.
Of course. He is Mr. Noah.
He is Mr. Noah.
Absolutely.
From Misawa Kobashi's day into this dark period of pro wrestling, into all the new guys coming in, he's still there. You know what I'm saying?
He's like John Cena or Tanahashi. He's Marufuji.
Pretty much so. Yeah. Marufuji is Noah.
He's like the captain of the team.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And also, he was the chosen one from Misawa himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this he's also, he was chosen from Misawa, and he's who got Muto to come over.
Because Muto and Misawa never met in a single match in their time. But for Marufuji's mind, what they needed for Pro Wrestling Noah that year, these Mr. Keiji Muto come over here and join this pro wrestling Noah formula. Mm-hmm. And Muto did it,
He did it Muto's way. It was Muto era. It was...
Well, also Misawa and Muto were the two, distinctive superstars in the 90s into 2000, but they never met. And then Misawa's gone, I'm sorry. But Marufuji looked at Muto and said, he's available. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And Muto should be in this cluster and finish his, legendary wrestling career in Pro Wrestling Noah ring. And that's exactly what Muto did. Yeah. And Marufuji basically orchestrated the whole thing.
Mm.
Yeah. So in and out of ring. Yes. So very, very important.
Yeah.
Very important. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, and also what was interesting was that we've been talking about this, the Ibushi Marufuji match, but it was a main event, non-title match, but actual GHC title match was a match before that.
Mm-hmm.
Champion Ken-O against Manabu Soya, and on paper, Ken-O against Manabu Soya, GHC title match. Huh. Right? Then they gave best match of their, Ken-O's been good. He's been good, but Manabu Soya's best match in his career, though.
Definitely. Yeah. His whole year, 2023, has been the best year of his career. He's had his best match.
It was hard for people to pay attention to him.
Yes. Yeah. Because he's been around as good as he is. He's like someone like a Tomohiro Ishii in that he's been around. I used to watch him.
Yeah, and also legitimate wrestling background and everything. You know, just that people are not paying attention. Like he's like a Mark Henry or somebody.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You know I always saying? Used to see him with Omori in All Japan. Get wild where they wore the bearskin.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, yeah. Because he was tag team partner of somebody.
Takawa Omori.
Yeah, I mean, like somebody meaning that he wasn't the main
guy. Yes, yeah, so he was the second. He was the younger guy. Yeah, it was Omori's team. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he
had the long hair.
Yeah, and also he came to Pro Wrestling Noah with other guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He wasn't it. But all along, he's been here, and he just, this was pretty much Manabu Soya's night, that people actually believed him that this guy is a single title match caliber guy, and probably the one of the strongest powerhouse type wrestler in Japan now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Very athletic. He did a tope in the match.
Oh, a real heavy
dunk. I lost my brain. Oh my God. It was he's very dramatic in his wrestling. He's very explosive. He can fly too. Yeah.
And wonderful. Wrestler can change overnight. I'm talking about people's perception can change overnight.
Oh yeah.
So that was a night that people say, oh wow, this guy is a main event guy.
Absolutely.
KO. He's been real good. I mean, size, last smaller than your traditional heavyweight champions, like compared to Misawa or Kobashi or, Muto for that matter, Chono Hashimoto. It's like he's not really tall, but he's so focused.
But he does.
He carries himself. He carries himself as superstar.
He has the presence, and he also has what the other guys didn't have. What he lacks in size, he has a legitimate martial arts background. A very successful one.
Nippon Kenpo National Champion.
Yeah. He was like the youngest champion at the time. I don't know if it's still that he holds that record. But
probably people are not so familiar with, the listeners out there. Nippon Kenpo is like your Japanese-style karate boxing.
Japanese MMA or something like
that. Yeah, but there's no submission. It's like a kicking and punching with dogi.
Kicking and punching, and you wear the face mask, chest gear, and it's much like boxing, but there is a lot of a grappling-esque kind of skill, standing arm locks,
standing.
Like judo style, like you use it to knock them out. In karate, sweeps.
So he was a Nippon Kenpo national champion in high school. The Ken-O obviously is ring name. Ken. Fist. O is King. Mm-hmm. King of Fist.
Mm-hmm.
That's his ring name from day one. But he was discovered by Jinsei Shinzaki. He's from Tokushima. Yeah, Hakushi in America. He was discovered by him, and he's from same hometown, Tokushima. Someplace else. Meaning that the excursion, you would think you were sent to Mexico somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead, he was sent to Okinawa, actually. Seriously.
Yeah, it's not where you usually go for an excursion. Some people would think that's a vacation.
There was a place in Okinawa at the time, Okinawa Pro Wrestling. It runs show every night, with Super Dolphin.
Yeah.
And he had a mask on as a rookie and spent 1 year over there and had over 300 matches before he came back to Michinoku Pro Wrestling. Where was he the whole year? He was gone, and he had a mask on. He was playing somebody else down in Okinawa and had 300 matches or so under his belt, then came back like a very seasoned guy. He's ready to go. And he and Hayato, Fujita Junior Hayato was a big rival for Michinoku's Tohoku title. Yeah. Then he asked that the Ken-O asked Shinzaki, I would like to go Noah. Then he set the thing up and said, okay, I'll arrange that. You'll be working Noah. And he's been doing that Noah thing ever since. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a real good thing.
Shinzaki gave him that name, Ken-O.
Yeah, Ken-O, and then also opportunity to go to Tokyo and work with Pro Wrestling Noah. And after you join Noah, you're on your own. Then Kongo and all these things.
And Shinzaki has been showing up every now and then in the Pro Wrestling Noah matches. He was there just in December.
Oh, okay. As a guest appearance.
Him but and Fujinami. They had the dream match.
Okay.
I think that was in Yokohama. Yeah, it was Kano and Shinzaki versus Soya and Fujinami. And
right.
Kind of preview of the match that just happened this month.
Because of the Shinzaki's character and Kano's character, he wouldn't be doing much of a mic, you know? Like, I mean, Kano does mic, you know? But it's all in his Kano character. He doesn't do anything else. So he wouldn't be talking about his own, I mean, real background that much, you know. But I believe he really is a good Noah GHC champion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just the beginning. He's going to have a match in a couple weeks against Io Dr. Wagner Jr.
All right. Yeah. So it's very interesting that the whole week, the beginning of this January, you know, it's been 3 weeks since that.
It's crazy. It's flying by.
Yeah, Ibushi Maruji match. But the end of the year into New Year's, into, you know, New Japan, Tokyo Dome, Wrestle Kingdom, to Pro Wrestling Noah's Ariake Arena card. Then New Japan's New Year Dash thing. And it's like, wow, it's like January, a lot of things already happened. Yeah.
January is always, it's always busy time of the month, especially in Japanese pro wrestling.
I guess. Yeah.
It's like a fiscal beginning of the year feeling.
Yeah, well, because New Year's Day, New Year's Eve, and New Year's Eve into New Year's Day is the biggest holiday in Japan. And And the biggest news came right after this January thing that Kazuchika Okada quitting and leaving New Japan Pro Wrestling, the biggest superstar of this last decade. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it surprised a lot of people.
Yeah. And how is that, you know, news taking, you know, like even with this so-called more American English speaking podcast world?
Sure. Well, it's funny. We're recording on the night that he appeared in TNA, but I believe this was a planned appearance. It had already happened, or I think it was taped this weekend or something, but I think it's a one-off. But more people speculating. People are speculating and mixing it with what they want to see.
Yeah, but the they don't believe he would join TNA Impact.
There's always a handful of people who believe all kinds of things, that he would go there, that he'll go somewhere AEW. I have no idea. I mean, if you're to think about it without knowing anything else, I have no idea what he wants. I know he just had a child, and I know he just got married. And I imagine, how old is he? 34, 35?
36.
36. So it's, what's the next step? What's the next step? If you go to AEW, you could do Kenny Omega. Okada.
Oh, no. Next step definitely will be WWE.
That's the thing. When I think WWE, everything is fresh for him there.
I mean, any match. Okada against Seth Rollins. Okada against Cody Rhodes. Okada against Roman Reigns. Okada against
anybody.
Kevin Owens, anybody.
Him against
all dream matches.
Like a Chad Gable, or imagine him in the ring with someone like Omos, you know?
Yeah.
It's all new. It's all fresh.
Of course.
And money is much different. So based on all that, it makes the most sense. And also
going, a lot of English-speaking world think this, like, well, the straight to AEW, right? But it's like Kenny Omega, that the Will Ospreay, the whatnot. It's like almost rerun of
rerun. I like that. Yeah.
Took place in New Japan Ring. And you've seen it, you know? For Okada, it's kind of like a been there, done that.
Yeah, that's
especially
the thing.
Especially like, Brian, you know, Daniel Bryan. So
close.
Brian Danielson against Okada just happened in Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
And AEW last year. Mm-hmm. And these things already took place and nothing new. Plus, like guys like Jay White, they're there.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's nothing new.
Right.
For him. And ground to conquer. And also, maybe some people disagree with this, but Okada right now is already above everybody else in AEW. You know?
I mean, it's hard to argue.
Yeah, so WWE is the only place. The only place. And he's hinting it, you know, this is like very last night. It was not the last night because the one more important match is coming. But the last Korakuen Hall appearance, never six-man tag team title, champion trio of Okada, Tanahashi, and Ishii, right? They beat Mikey Nicholson and Shane Haste and Fujita. Then, you know, defend his the never six-man tag title, then relinquish the title to return. And Okada announced this, that this is his final chance to do a new thing. He already gave the answer. Yeah, this is my final chance to go into some new challenge, new thing, start the new thing. So I don't think AEW is anything new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And WWE just signed a new television deal in Japan with ABEMA.
Oh, yes. God. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, and you cannot, was it like, there were a lot of people in Japan already signed with WWE Network, right?
Oh, that's right. And, yeah.
Yeah. But they, including myself, WWE Network sent us all the Japanese subscribers email saying that all the live, I was going to say pay per view, but they don't call it pay per view. Prime live
event? Premium live events.
Okay, PLE.
PLE.
Yeah, will not be available in WWE Network in Japan. Instead, please be subscribing ABEMA instead from this point forward. Oh my gosh. I have subscription of both ABEMA and WWE Network. And WWE Network, I still want to subscribe it because I want to watch real old archives, you know, or the AWA or Crockett or, you know, like a real old stuff like a WWF or something, Bob Backlund, Superstar Billy Graham. I'd like to watch it. And the rumor says that the WWE Network could be shutting down at the end of 2024 too, right? I don't know. But it's part of Peacock too. It's completely different platform. But when you say WWE in Japan, it's pretty much ABEMA now.
That's right. So pulling that to Okada, I mean, it makes sense if you want something new and you're trying to grow something in Japan. Understandable. There's all kinds of options, but it's all up to what the guy wants to do. And I did hear once in an interview, he said his dream opponent is The Rock. That should count.
Yeah. Well, plus he hasn't been.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. So he has to be whole new ground. The only place is WWE. And also that the point we need to point out, this is like he's leaving New Japan very good term too. Technically Okada's contract expires on January 31st, technically. Okay, but he's honoring two more dates. You know, one in February in Sapporo and February 11th in Osaka. 12 years ago, 2012, in February, same Osaka Fritz building, return of Okada, and then champion, IWGP champion Tanahashi, challenger return of Okada from TNA, met in a very historical match. That was the night Star Wars born. They're called it
Rainmaker Shock.
Yeah. Then new IWGP champion, the youngest, much like Randy Orton, youngest IWGP champion at the time, 24-year-old Okada beat Tanahashi. Then the full circle, 12 years later, 2024, same February, same week, same building in Osaka, Tanahashi and Okada meeting for the final time for now, yes.
But, for now.
This, you know, 36-year-old, 12 years later, 36-year-old Okada against 47-year-old Tanahashi meeting for the final time. It's like a very honorable setup. And now the president, Tanahashi didn't have to do it. Yeah. President Tanahashi didn't have to do it, but it's like he's sending him off to the bigger and better thing. I mean, I'm not saying WWE is bigger and better thing. We're probably not going to talk about Vince's lawsuit or anything like that today, but that's big, right?
It's big, but I feel like a lot of people are going to be talking about it today. And I think we need to wait to learn a lot more information.
Yeah, I just happened to I just read this 64-page, you know.
The affidavit, yeah.
Yeah. It's bad. It looks bad.
Damning, I mean.
Yeah.
But did you ever hear the idiom, where there's smoke, there's fire? So.
Yeah, and it's like a very detailed.
It's extremely detailed from some of the parts that I saw. It's a little too detailed for what from what I read, but
And also the photocopy of that phone text.
I haven't gotten that far into it. No spoilers, but
okay, but it's very graphic.
I'm gonna wait to
We're not gonna go into that.
Before I read that,
that's why it was hard for me to say WWE being simply better, bigger, and better things. You know, but as a wrestling,
I know what you mean. Yeah,
but as a wrestling,
from Okada's
talent,
point of view, new challenge. Like
And the place he hasn't been to, and he's never been WrestleMania. And if he signed, he's a type of a superstar who be introduced the night after WrestleMania.
Sure. Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, because WrestleMania is already produced and complete. Everything all set up, and it's going to be the biggest event, of course. But the night after WrestleMania always is like a season premiere, like a big time new. I mean, like a big superstar newcomer, you know, being introduced, or a new storyline, new angle, something always introduced like a season premiere. So that's the perfect night that Okada, you know, should be debuting. And I'm hoping. And I'm hoping he will be introduced as somebody very special instead of being sent to NXT or anything like that.
I mean, I can't imagine they would change his name to like a Hideo Itami or something.
Yeah, but I'll take that, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura as an example.
I think that's going to be the blueprint.
Yeah, Shinsuke Nakamura hasn't changed much. He's using his real name and the costume. Nothing stereotypical Japanese about it, although he has the mist.
But he officially has the mist from Muta because
it was given to
him last year.
DNA. And a single match. So it makes sense. But it's not like, you know, you'd be in a different costume and different name and different character and the whole thing. He should be Kazuchika Okada himself.
Absolutely. The Rainmaker.
And I'm hoping they'll put somebody like Paul Heyman.
Wow, imagine that.
I mean, like, my name is Paul Heyman. I'm introducing the international biggest superstar of our time. Then people, you know, because WWE Universe is kind of an arrogant in certain way that it's not happening in WWE, never happened or never existed. You know what I'm saying? Because that's how they've been trained. You know, this WWE is the only place. If it didn't happen in WWE ring, it never happened.
Exactly.
Conditioned. So. Yeah. So that's why either somebody like Paul Heyman or Triple H himself should be introducing Kazuchika Okada in the ring. Yeah. The latest signing of WWE. And this may be the biggest signing of the decade. And finally, this international superstar who never worked, much like when he introduced Sting, a little bit late, you know, in his career, but he was 50-something then. But somebody who's never worked in WWE ring, but he will be introduced as somebody very special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. So that's what they need to do with Okada.
Well, see.
Maybe he might sign with AEW and I might be all wrong. That's fine.
You know, it's something similar, very similar happened with Katsuhiko Nakajima last October. Similar path, but I think he's doing something. He's going a different way right now, Nakajima. He's doing some work with All Japan and such. But just like Okada's honoring dates after his contract, Nakajima did as well and did a couple final Korakuen Hall show, final Osaka show, final Yokohama, etc., etc.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll probably talk about All Japan in probably our next episode.
There's a lot to talk about with them.
Yeah, because we have a lot more to share in next time. Yeah.
Okay, next time.
But it's sketchy right now. But so when we talk about Okada, yes, that he, in my opinion, he should be just the biggest addition to WWE roster.
I know not everybody likes to hear that. Everybody likes to imagine seeing him where they want him to be, but I think
AEW?
People have all kinds of opinions. They want to see him all kinds of places, but all right, like you're saying.
Provided that Okada has 3 to 5 year run with WWE, okay? Then he can still go to AEW, though.
Of course.
As a main event.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. So, well, it depends on what the man wants to do. Like, I brought up Nakajima because that's one way you can do it. You can go freelance a little bit, explore. I remember when Taiji Ishimori, before he signed with New Japan, I remember he would dabble. He went to TNA and he did indies in the US and he popped around and then he solidified. Shingo Takagi did as well. You know what I mean?
Well,
who knows?
This January 25th thing was TNA Impact that the Okada appeared. That's how he wants people to think.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. And he's not going there.
But it's a great press, so.
Yeah, I think so. And also, appearance in American Ring, American Turf.
Of course. Yeah. Technically, it's Canadian, but it's whatever.
Oh, okay.
Neither here nor there these days.
English-speaking world.
Sure. Yeah. External world, yeah.
Yeah. So we talked about Ibushi and Maru Fuji, and if people want to, you know, send us, you know, different opinion or questions, we'll answer that. And we talked about Okada, and then if people have different opinion or questions, we'll take that, you know.
Please, yeah.
And yeah, and then we have to talk about Killer Khan.
Yes, yeah. The late Killer Khan.
Yeah, because he officially had retired back in 1987, meaning that he was gone 37 years ago. 37 years, meaning that if you were like a late 40s into early 50s, they were still in junior high school. When he retired. So it's not like kind of wrestler that people remember. You have to be old enough to remember anything about Killer Khan.
Yeah, I mean, and if you are old enough, you definitely remember Hulkamania. Killer Khan was a big part of Hulkamania, at least if you...
Yeah.
That's from what I remember. Also, I have a question quickly. After he retired, Killer Khan, did he immediately move back to Japan or did he live in the States?
Between 78, 79 into like 84, he was actually living in Florida, married.
Yeah, I the first time I ever saw Killer Khan, I remember it wasn't on a wrestling TV show. It was on a kids TV show in America with Missing Link.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I appeared as a monster?
He was like it was like a kids game show where like the kids would face like a special like adults, like a celebrities, like sports people, and one episode they had to fight against Killer Khan and I believe Missing Link and some other guys that were in WWF.
Probably when
he
worked World Class Data Stan. Yeah, because Missing Link sounds like World Class Dallas.
I don't know if these guys were actively working at the time, though. I think they were maybe just retired or.
Oh, okay. But Killer Khan was the type of wrestler that he worked WWF, of course, and NWA Florida, NWA Georgia. He worked Bill Watts, you know, Mid-South Wrestling. Mid-South meaning like your Mississippi, Louisiana, Oklahoma, but not, right? Then he had a run in Mexico. He went up to Calgary. And he had WWE at the time, when he initially worked WWE, it was like 81, 82, 83, that it was before national expansion, meaning that the New York, the Boston, the pretty much East Coast area. But he worked all over these, what we used to call it, territory days. Yeah. Then also, the biggest run was that 81, supposedly, of course, and he broke Andre the Giant's leg.
It was big.
In reality, that in hotel room, when Andre the Giant tried to get up in hotel room, he broke his leg. But the Vince McMahon Sr., not this Vince McMahon, but the Vincent James McMahon Sr., he came up with the idea, Killer Khan broke Andre the Giant's leg. The killer was born. And not just Madison Square Garden and the Boston and Philadelphia or Baltimore. This Andre the Giant and Killer Khan package went up to Toronto, Montreal, Louisiana. He went to different territory as a package. So Andre the Giant, he was a traveling superstar all year long. You know, it's under contract with Vince McMahon Senior's WWF, but Andre the Giant traveled all year long doing all the battle royals and things, right? different territory when all the different NWA and AWA company were harmonized, just geographic territory. And he was like a Vince McMahon Sr.'s ambassador under the Giant going different places. Most of the time, they're doing battle royal. When Andre the Giant come to your town, it's a like a mega show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one year, it was Andre the Giant against Killer Khan, package deal. This guy broke Andre the Giant's leg, man, kind of thing. And so he was it was pretty much like beyond territory superstar, Killer Khan was. Yeah.
Like and an attraction.
Yeah. And probably people think he was really from Mongolia, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Where did the Mongolian gimmick come from?
When he first, like excursion, you know, mm-hmm. he was sent to Mexico. He was sent to Mexico in 78. And his name was Temujin Mongol. Temujin is Genghis Khan's child name.
Mm-hmm.
Came up by Karl Gotch. None other than Karl Gotch.
Wow. Yeah.
Interesting, huh? Well, Karl Gotch, when you say, was a pioneer of MMA and all these, all shoot wrestling and all these things. But all in all, he was a professional wrestler too, you know? And Karl Gotch, it was useless tribute, but Karl Gotch gave Sakaguchi his first atomic drop, you know, like for the butt. Mm. No Japanese wrestler was doing it. So he came up, okay, Sakaguchi is as tall and big as he was. He should use one Japanese wrestler should use atomic drop. So Karl Gotch gave Sakaguchi atomic drop. And Karl Gotch gave Inoki octopus, the signature octopus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, manjigatame. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Karl Gotch also gave Riki Choshu his signature scorpion death rock. I mean, after it's like a came actually, Karl Gotch spent a lot of time in Mexico,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it was from Humley's gym that you have Mexican jabe, like mm-hmm. Mexican submissions. They came up with this, you know, scorpion death rock and it became Riki Choshu's signature move for the next 40 years. If it wasn't for, you know, Riki Choshu's scorpion deathlock, there was no sharpshooters. You know what I'm saying? So like, it's a useless trivia, but he had a lot of, that the Karl Gotch had a fingerprint on a lot of historical things. Anyhow, this Temujin Mongol, that the child name of Genghis Khan, Temujin Mongol name was given by Karl Gotch. That was Killer Khan's very first name in Mexico. Then, he, you know, after Mexico, he went to NWA Florida, then became Killer Khan, Genghis Khan, grown up. Yeah, adult life, yeah. And NWA Florida at the time was like a Dusty Rhodes, the Jack Briscoe, the Eddie Graham, like a golden era of your NWA territory. And Killer Khan was like instant killer, big heel, yeah. And Killer Khan was an interesting character because he shouldn't be doing mic, right?
Mm.
I mean, he's like more like an Abdul the Butcher or King Curtis type that he should be doing, making face.
Madman.
Yeah, and then heel manager should be doing the talking. And in Florida, Tiger Hattori was his manager before he was referee. Tiger Hattori, the same Tiger Hattori that we know from New Japan. And Sonny King, the black guy, he was also manager. And when he went to first round with WWF, he had Freddie Blassie, of course, Killer Khan. Then went down south in Louisiana, he had people like Gary Hart and Scandal Akbar.
Mm.
Always had this typical signature heel manager of the territory. And what Killer Khan did was this. he didn't speak a word of English, which is fine because he just does work, you know. And he went to world class. He went to Louisiana, went to NWA Georgia, NWA Florida, and went up to WWF, you know. And of course, had a single match program against Bob Backlund at the time, too. Yeah. And the biggest round was, though, his single match program with Andre the Giant, 81, mm-hmm. 82. And also, there was a single round-robin spring tournament in New Japan called Madison Square Garden Series. 78, 79, 80, 81, 82. Yeah, five-year period, 78 to 82, until inaugural IWGP tournament. You know, the very first IWGP tournament was 1983, okay? up until then, there was a Madison Square Garden series. All the superstars from WWF goes to Japan and fight people like Inoki, the Fujinami, the Sakaguchi, the young Riki Choshu, and all these things as a package. And the final Madison Square Garden series, spring of 82, the tournament final was Antonio Inoki against Andre the Giant. Inoki got injured and, you know, you needed a sub. You would think people like Fujinami or Sakaguchi go in there, right? Instead, they had the idea. We'll use Killer Khan as Inoki's sub. And you know that Andre the Giant and Killer Khan was the tournament final. Very interesting. Yeah. And of course, Andre won, but it was like, this is like, that's the main event, the big arena in America, you know. That was actually the biggest year for Killer Khan. And useless trivia that the December of 82, there was a Madison Square Garden tag team tournament. The final was Inoki and Hulk Hogan tag team against Killer Khan and Taiga Toguchi, Kim Dark, you know, Taiga Chan Lee. Yeah. So it was like a Japanese heel against Inoki and young Hulk Hogan tag team. It was a tournament final. See, Hulk Hogan was a big, huge superstar in Japan years before he was a Hulkamania.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And also another useless trivia was though, when Killer Khan was working in NWA Florida in Tampa, there was an apartment complex that all the boys lived. Fujinami lived there. Taiga Hattori lived there. Upstairs, young Hulk Hogan was living in the same apartment complex. Yeah. He was trained to be wrestler, but he was still playing bass for the band Ruckus. Yeah, so they were friends. Yeah. The Hulk Hogan and Killer Khan's always been friends. And 10 years ago already, wow, 10 years ago, Hulk Hogan actually came to Japan for vacation and wanted to find the GTR, you know, the Toyota GTR 5-speed. It's like legendary, you know, 5-speed car that is hard to find. Hulk Hogan is like a car collector, right? And came to Japan to find mint condition GTR. And he was staying at the Kyo Plaza Hotel. And the first night, he took cab to Killer Khan's restaurant, wanted to catch up with friends. Yeah, yeah. So they were close. And what Killer Khan said, you know, as Hulk Hogan walking to the restaurant, no appointment, nothing, right? Terry! Yeah, it's like, yeah. So they were friends. And Hulk Hogan is so misunderstood, too, that he's actually very, very friendly, nice guy, you know? Yeah. And they got together, you know. Killer Khan's English, not perfect, but doesn't matter, right? Communicate. Yeah.
And you mentioned Killer Khan had a pretty popular bar restaurant.
Yeah, bar and grill. I spent every New Year's Eve for the past, right until right before the pandemic. So 2017, 18, 19 into 20, yeah, I was there just about every year and have Toshikoshi Soba. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
New Year's noodles.
New Year's noodles, yeah. And when you have this celebrity restaurant and bars, you know, named after this big celebrity or something, when you go there, they're never there, right? But for the Killer Khan's bar, he's always there, you know. And he's the one come and take order, you know, from you. And he's the one bringing food to your table. And when bar's not really too crowded, he'll probably sit next to you and then, you know, talk his wrestling tales.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was in Okubo?
In Okubo. Right. Yeah. And when the pandemic broke up, he had to close the place in 2021, but he reopened the bar in another part of Nishi Shinjuku. Was the last place. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. So he had probably like 5 different locations in the last 20 years or so.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. But he always was like in food, you know, like a restaurant business. You know why? Because it's chanko. It's a sumo culture. He was born in 1947, meaning like 2 years after the war, right? And he was 76 years old. Right? Okay, 10th grade, he played basketball. But he quit high school and joined sumo wrestling in 1963. He was sumo wrestler until like 1970, so he had 7-year sumo career. That's where you cut your tooth, right? Like as a, you know, sports celebrity and small culture and being in front of public eyes and as big as he is, you know, as a Japanese, he's huge, right?
Mm.
And he was perfect for sumo, but it wasn't quite Yokozuna or anything like that. But he quit sumo in spring of 1970 and joined JWA, Nippon Pro Wrestling. Nippon Pro Wrestling in 71. And 73, he was one of the four wrestlers who joined New Japan with Sakaguchi. Seiji Sakaguchi, Daigoro Oshiro, Masashi Ozawa, later Kirakan, and Kengo Kimura, young Kengo Kimura. Yeah. Those four wrestlers quit Japan Pro Wrestling and brought the TV Asahi deal with them and joined the second year of Inoki's New Japan.
Mm.
And after Sakaguchi's group joined New Japan and Inoki and started a TV, you know, World Pro Wrestling, TV Asahi, I mean, the program that runs all the way till now, that JWA went down 2 months after. So it was like he was part of the, you know, changing a big change of landscape of Japanese wrestling. And he was Sakaguchi's young guy, yeah, at the time. Then 76, the very first overseas tour the Kirakan Ozawa had was with young Fujiwara. Interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yoshiaki Fujiwara. Fujiwara Armbar Fujiwara. Young Fujiwara and young Ozawa was sent to Germany, then West Germany, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I mean, yeah, because there was West Germany and East Germany, but he was sent to Germany, yeah, for one tour. I mean, like a fall to winter season tour, yeah. Then came back. So actually, he was there in the ringside when Inoki had this famous single mixed fight against Muhammad Ali. He was in ringside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting, huh?
With Carl Gotch.
Yeah, but what was one of the young boys, so he wasn't important then.
But see, he was there.
Inoki, Muhammad Ali fight, you see Carl Gotch in ringside, Sakaguchi in ringside, and everybody else. But he was actually in the background.
You know, you mentioned he was around for the changing of the tides in Japanese wrestling, but even in the 80s, he was around for that little Ishin-gun, change too.
Right, because
right.
He turned heel in the ring and joins, you know, Riki Choshu, Masa Saito, and Kuniaki Kobayashi, and this is a heel. Now we call it a faction, right?
Mm. It's like NWO.
Yeah, that actual heel faction became Japan Pro Wrestling, and Riki Choshu and his 15 guys actually moved to All Japan and signed with Giant Baba. Yeah, that was interesting. There was like 84 UWF guys left New Japan, right? Like Maeda, the Takada, the Fujiwara, the all this like 10 guys gone. Then Riki Choshu and his 15 guys gone. And all of a sudden that the New Japan became skeleton again. Then you had Ruki, Muto, Chono, Hashimoto in that pack. Mm-hmm. The history is interesting. Yeah.
Very.
But Killer Khan was part of the Riki Choshu's group who migrated from New Japan to All Japan. Then what was happening was that 2 years later, in spring of 1987, Riki Choshu and his guys, like, you know, Kuniaki Kobayashi, the rookie Hiroshi Hase, the rookie Kensuke Sasaki, the Super Strong Machine, the Norio Honaga, that group went back to New Japan. Mysteriously, Killer Khan was not in that package. Spring of 87, he was one of the few guys, along with like people like Yoshiaki Yatsu and Haruka Eigen, that he decided to stay with All Japan package. And later years, like up until now, that Killer Khan has this YouTube channels, he was bad mouthing Riki Choshu until the last days, you know, for some reason. I mean, like, he was not in the package to go back to New Japan. Instead, he stayed with All Japan spring of 87, but that was the year that Killer Khan decided to have his final tour with WWF. All by himself, he went back to States in summer of 87, had a program against Hulk Hogan right away, and he was tag teaming with Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase, and he had another run with, you know, 87 version of WWF. Then he came back to Japan with no retirement match or no retirement ceremony, and he's been gone out of the ring ever since. So he disappeared from wrestling scene in 1987 and never came back once.
That's rare.
But he was in public eyes because he was running his own restaurant. It's been popular, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's one of the very mysterious part of Killer Khan's disappearing and retiring. He did retire in 87 without making like the official announcement.
Mm-hmm.
He just quit.
Yeah. No Onita style.
Never went back to New Japan. Never went back to Old Japan. His final destination was WWF and short program with Hulk Hogan. Then came home and never wrestled again. Interesting, huh?
Very unique. Yeah. And I can't compare him to too many.
Because most guys will come back and have at least few matches, huh?
Usually, especially in pro wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. But after 87, he never once went back to the ring. But he was still Killer Khan.
Well, not
Masashi Ozawa. Yeah, yeah. Masashi Ozawa, that's his real name, but his bar was always Killer Khan's bar,
mm-hmm.
restaurant. Yeah. And he always looked like Killer Khan after his wrestling. He never grew his hair back. He always had this Fu Manchu goatee, and he was big guy, and he always treated other people as Killer Khan, and he was treated as Killer Khan. Yeah, yeah. And also, he was selling Killer Khan t-shirt and sports towel and other photos and other things, right? But he never sold anything on the internet. The old fashioned, huh?
Very.
Yeah, because you have to go to his restaurant to buy his gimmick. Nothing was on the internet. I mean, this day and age.
Everything is,
Yeah. But so people who went to, came to Japan, who managed to go to Killer Khan's restaurant, they all got picture taken with Killer Khan and bought t-shirt and ate his food. Yeah. And he'll be friendly enough to be talking his wrestling stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kind of a sumo style thing too. There's a lot of sumo.
I think so. Once you quit, you don't come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's with a very sumo thing.
And opening a restaurant, chatting with the
That's very sumo. And chanko.
It's a chanko
food. Yeah,
it's pretty. I guess that's why what makes him different is he kind of took that sumo lifestyle.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
pretty quiet.
And once you like what Tenru said. Once you're a sumo wrestler, you always be a sumo wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Tenryu was sumo wrestler before he was professional wrestler. You know, much like Killer Khan. Yeah,
Rikidozan and
Rikidozan. Yeah, yeah. So once you're a sumo wrestler, up here always will be sumo wrestler, huh?
Mm, I think
value orientation. You know,
lots of traditions and rituals to remember and etiquette and.
Weight, I guess, yeah.
Being in public and such.
And everything cash instead of credit card.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that much cash in his pocket always.
Yeah.
I mean, you could apply credit card and they'll give it to you, but he just doesn't trust credit card. Always carry a lot of cash in his pocket. Very small, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, Killer Khan, I think this is our generation's role or I think it's our task that we'll talk about Killer Khan. And because what was interesting is another thing was that his matches are not in New Japan World.
Mm.
None of the matches. You know why? Because that the TV Asahi people and New Japan people came to Killer Khan's restaurant before they, you know, started this New Japan World streaming service that would it be okay to have you in there and all these things, like also sign the paper, you know, that he will, it's kind of like a disclaimer, right? Mm-hmm. All his previous matches archived on New Japan World. So you have the match we talked about, Andre the Giant against Killer Khan, the Madison Square Garden tournament final, or the Madison Square Garden tag team tournament final, Inoki, Hulk Hogan against Killer Khan and Kim Dark. That should be in there, don't you think? Historical matches. But none of the Killer Khan matches are on New Japan World because he says, I'm not interested. Don't put me in there.
Hmm. A few wrestlers did that. Brock Lesnar did something similar too, and there was some. You can't find certain wrestlers' matches on on New Japan.
Right, but they will be willing to pay certain percentage in appearance, right? But the Killer Khan said, "No, I'm not interested. Don't put me in there." What's interesting is that, like, a 70s matches, like Inoki against Tiger Jeet Singh or something, in the background, young Killer Khan's walking around the ring, right?
Mm-hmm.
It has a mosaic on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, like a strange looking
pixelated. They can't even show his face. Like it's a criminal or something.
He never said that I want to be part of this New Japan world.
You can't show his likeness on the screen.
Right.
He needs to sign for it. Yeah.
Or Killer Khan's lawyer can always sue you, but he's not the type,
Right.
Yeah. But what's interesting, like a 70s matches that the young Killer Khan Ozawa walking around the ring is like, strange, funny. Real strange.
Interesting. Yeah.
But now that he's gone, that maybe his family can allow it, that the New Japan World should have important matches of Killer Khan's career in there, Or maybe bootleg that NWA Florida footage or that some fan will put a old New Japan, matches on on YouTube or something like maybe today you can find some Killer Khan matches.
Sure, you can find the Killer Khan matches on YouTube. I think there's always fans uploading old stuff.
But they'll come and erase it though.
Come and erase it, and another fan will upload it.
Yeah. But it's like Killer Khan's legacy and accomplishment, his name being so overlooked, for today's fans. That's why we have to, this our role to keep his legacy in wrestling. Yeah.
I'm happy to. Yes. We're happy to.
Okay. Too. So that's what we were talking about today. Yeah.
That's what's going on this week. And next time we'll talk about what's going on in all Japan and other stuff, whatever. This Okada thing is going to develop.
Next episode, we probably will know more about Kazuchika Okada too.
Sure. And even maybe with Ibushi as a condition and all kinds of...
Yeah, and basically Ibushi is still freelancer in Japan. Yeah. Is he under contract to the AEW?
Yes.
Yeah, appeared in AEW.
I can only say from my end, we were promoting him as Kota Ibushi from AEW.
Right. Oh, that's right. And also, Katsuyori Shibata is AEW.
AEW, ROH, or...
Yeah. But not New Japan Strong at all. He officially quit New Japan Strong.
Because that's New Japan Bushiroad property and stuff he is with.
He officially resigned from that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that, people like Tanahashi, Shinsuke Nakamura, Okada, and Katsuyori Shibata, all these superstars going separate way. Isn't that interesting?
We'll say
once upon a time, they were Young Lion.
I think this is just a new chapter, especially for those guys that you mentioned, because I think they'll be around for a long time.
Of course, because they will be superstar for 30-year period.
And we'll talk about them. Yeah, like
Kazuchika Okada has his legacy and his path. Hiroshi Tanahashi has his path, and his destiny. Shinsuke Nakamura choose his path and his career in America. And everybody's, decided the certain path they choose. Very interesting, huh? Because remember, Hashimoto, Muto, and Chono, they all choose different path at the end.
Very different, yeah.
So it's whole new era now, huh? 2024. Yeah. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, exactly. And a happy belated birthday to you as well.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think, did we cover a lot today?
I think so. I think that's what's going on in the world of Japanese pro wrestling this month, for real. This is the most talked about topics. I can't think of, and if people want us to talk about something, they can contact us and
talk about it. And also, I really needed to talk about Killer Khan, for the English-speaking audience.
Yeah. And so, I guess until next time, Fumi, take it away.
Okay. Well, where can I be found?
Oh, that's right. We haven't done this in a while.
Okay, Fumi Saito on Facebook.
Sorry, X, not Twitter.
Okay, on X, Fumihiko Dayo at Fumihiko Dayo, Fumihiko Dayo on X, formerly known as Twitter. Or I have Instagram too, Fumi Saito 2001. Or you can just message me on Facebook, Fumi Saito.
On Twitter or X, whatever it's called, I'm at Justin M. Nipper, K-N-I-P-P-E-R. And you can write us down. I mean, you can email us.
And we take all the questions too.
Yeah.
Let's answer, questions.
So,
because we always have new audience, younger audience.
So bring them on. Okay. And until next time,
we'll meet. So long from Tokyo. Did I do okay?
Very good.
Yeah, I think we did pretty good episode.
Yeah. It's going to say stop right now, so don't worry.